I can't believe Puddle would turn that offer down. Why would he?
Maybe he wants to be the hero. His uncle wouldn't sell out, so Malcolm Puddle decides he won't sell out either.
I have to confess, I hadn't counted on that. I was sure he would sell out if I offered him enough.
We've made a mistake in thinking Malcolm Puddle was the key here.
What do you mean?
There's no way Puddle would turn that money down if he didn't have someone behind him. And that someone is Smoke Jensen. He's your real enemy, not Malcolm Puddle. I think it's time we quit fooling around and get to the center of it. Take care of Smoke Jensen and you won't have any problems.
And by take care of, you mean...
Kill him.
We have tried that, remember?
We haven't tried it with the right people. To kill someone like Smoke Jensen, we're going to have to hire someone who's even better than he is.
And just who would that be, I ask you?
Jeremiah Priest.
Templeton showed Garneau a copy of the Big Rock Journal.
You can read about him here.
By dispatch to the Journal. Deadly encounter in Palmilla, New Mexico Territory. On the fifth instant, two men known for their skill with the pistol faced each other in a deadly confrontation in the Pair of Aces saloon. It is not known what precipitated the engagement, but those who witnessed the fact say never have two pistols been so rapidly drawn for only one to be so effectively engaged. As in all encounters, there must be one who prevails and one who fails. He who prevailed was Jeremiah Priest, and indeed, Mr. Priest walks among us today. The other participant in this deadly pas de deux was Coleman Wesley, a well-known bounty hunter. Mr. Wesley paid for his unfortunate encounter with Priest by forfeiture of his life, he being but a split second slower than his adversary. It is being said by those who witnessed the event that nobody in the country could match Priest for the quickness of his draw and the accuracy of his marksmanship.
Garneau looked back up at Templeton.
And you think this man, Jeremiah Priest, can take the measure of Jensen?
Yeah.
Then by all means, make arrangements for him to come.
He won't come cheap.
How much?
For someone like Priest, $10,000.
$10,000?
You were going to pay more than that to Puddle for his ranch. Without Jensen behind him, you can probably get it for a couple $100s.
But still... $10,000 for one man is a lot of money.
Colonel, you're relatively new here, so you don't know all there is to know about Smoke Jensen. You're going to have to find someone who's good, very good, to take care of the man. Someone like Jeremiah Priest. And that's going to cost you. But the beauty of it is this. You won't have to pay him one red cent unless he actually completes the job.
Oui. That's true, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Very well, monsieur. Find this man, Priest, and secure his services.
Smoke was out in front of his house when he saw Malcolm come riding up.
What's up? Not that I'm not happy to have you visit, but I expect this is more than a social call.
It's not exactly a social call. I had a couple visitors today.
Let me guess. Garneau and Templeton.
Yes, they offered to buy me out.
What was the offer?
$35,000.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, sir, it is. Especially considering my whole place, stock included, is worth somewhere around $25,000.
What'd you tell him?
I told him to give me 24 hours before I had to give him an answer.
I see.
Smoke, like you said, $35,000 is a lot of money.
Yes, it is. And I don't think anyone would hold it against you if you sold out to him.
I would. I would hold it against me.
Smoke didn't answer.
I mean, I should hold out, shouldn't I? Aren't the other farmers and ranchers sort of depending on me to hold out?
Malcolm, I can't make up your mind for you. You have to make up your own mind.
I just want to know that I'm doing the right thing.
Whatever you do will be the right thing.
That's no help.
Malcolm, let me put it this way. If you decide to sell out and go back to New York, I won't hold any hard feelings towards you. This isn't your world. You were drawn into it through no fault of your own.
That's true. And with $35,000 in cash, I could buy a small business in New York. Maybe meet a nice girl, get married, have a family.
Yeah, that's right.
What if I decided to stay here?
It could get rough.
Yes, I know.
But you wouldn't have to face it alone. The other ranchers and farmers will be with you, and so will I.
That's just what I wanted to hear. Tomorrow, when Garneau comes to see me, I'll tell him, Je vous remercie, mais la réponse est non. Je ne vendrai pas.
Say what?
Thank you, but the answer is no. I will not sell.
I'll be there when you tell him. I want to see his face.
Malcolm invited his neighbors over for a get-acquainted potluck dinner. As they arrived the next day, he asked that they park their buggies, buckboards, spring wagons, and horses in the barn so they were out of sight. Smoke put his horse and wagon with the rest. He had come to stand with the young rancher against Garneau. Malcolm had everyone gather in the keeping room.
I know you may wonder why I asked you to keep your horses and conveyances out of sight. Yesterday, Lucien Garneau made me an offer for my land. It was a very generous offer, and today he's coming to hear my response to his offer.
The expression on the faces of Malcolm's neighbors indicated their disappointment.
I am going to tell him no.
You're a good man, Malcolm Puddle.
Thank you, Mr. Woodward. When he arrives, I want him to be surprised to see you all here. I want him to know the resolve we all have to keep our land.
You're damn right.
The meal was served then, and after the meal, the women began cleaning up while the men gathered once more in the keeping room. Cigars were lit and brandy was passed around as they discussed the situation.
I've heard talk of Garneau putting together an army over at his place.
Now why would he do that, Otto?
For intimidation, Chris. But if we don't allow ourselves to be intimidated, it will fail.
Smoke stood looking out the window.
Here he comes. And he's not alone.
Oh, he probably has Mr. Templeton with him.
Yeah. Templeton and four others.
Four others? You mean there are six of them?
Yeah. Apparently he wasn't prepared to take no for an answer.
That's not the only thing he isn't prepared for. I don't expect he's prepared to see all of us here.
Chris, tell the ladies and the children to stay in the back of the house.
All right.
Come in, Colonel Garneau. The door is unlocked.
Garneau, Templeton, and the four other men came into the house.
Monsieur Puddle, your 24 hours are up. What is your...
Garneau was in shock to see so many men gathered in the room, one of whom was Smoke Jensen.
What is this?
It's too bad you weren't here earlier, Colonel Garneau. You could have eaten with us. All my neighbors came over to welcome me. They brought food, and we had a fine meal.
I came to hear your response to my offer.
Yes, well, as I said yesterday, Colonel, your offer was most generous. But now that I have met all my neighbors, I feel I would be doing them a disservice if I ran out on them. Again, I thank you for the generous offer, but I must decline.
You are making a big mistake, Monsieur Podol. When next we do business, and we will do business again, you will find my offer to be much less generous.
Oh, I don't see much possibility of our ever doing business, Mr. Garneau. By the way, please don't visit again, uninvited and unannounced. It does make for an awkward situation.
Garneau turned vivid scarlet.
Come!
Did you see the expression on his face when he saw all of us here?
Kiefer imitated the expression, opening his eyes and mouth wide as he looked around the room. Afterwards, as the others made preparations to leave, Lucy Woodward came over to speak to Malcolm. He had noticed the pretty young woman when she first arrived, and he was pleased when she had come over to speak to him.
I'm glad you're going to stay out here and not go back to New York.
I'm glad, too. There's nothing in New York for me.
I don't know if anyone has told you, but every month there's a dance at the Dunn Hotel.
Really? Well, that's very good to know.
Lucy smiled back, nodded, and quickly followed her parents out to their wagon. Smoke and Sally had come in a spring wagon so they could meet Pearly and Cal when their train came in. After hearing about the attack on their lives, Smoke told them to come home directly. Smoke and Sally were on the depot platform now to greet their two arriving hands, though of course they were much more than mere cattle hands. They were practically members of the family. Cal was the first one down, jumping from the train even before it had come to a complete stop. Pearly was right behind him. Seeing Smoke and Sally, they walked over to him quickly.
Welcome home, boys.
Sally greeted each one of them with a hug. Smoke shook hands with each of them.
How's the abattoir going?
Smoke, you ask about that stupid processing plant before you ask about Cal's arm.
Oh, my arm's fine, Miss Sally. The bullet didn't do nothing more than just sort of put a crease in it. Heck, I've been hurt worse getting hung up on barbed wire.
The plant's going great. You made a smart decision turning it over to Beans. He's a good man.
Turning it over to who?
Lloyd Evans. Aaron calls him Beans, and he knows that business from top to bottom. He used to work with DeMores when he had his plant up in Dakota Territory.
Say, as long as we're back in town, why don't we go over to Lambert's and have something to eat? One of his rolls would be real good right now.
Tell me, Cal, is there ever a time when one of Mr. Lambert's rolls wouldn't be good? Or Miss Sally's? Or anybody's roll for that matter?
Huh. Nope, can't think of such a time.
Once their luggage was thrown into the back of the spring wagon, the four walked across the street to Lambert's and seated themselves at a table.
Hey, Smoke? Who's that fella over there in the corner? He's staring at us and it don't look none too friendly.
In the corner of the restaurant, a well-dressed man was sitting alone.
That, Pearly, is Mr. Lucien Garneau. Though he likes to call him so. Colonel Garneau.
Colonel? You mean colonel? He's a colonel?
Certainly not the U.S. Army. Whether or not he was ever a colonel in the French Army, we have only his word for it. And so far, he hasn't proven himself to be a man whose word I'm inclined to take.
And does he live here now?
Yeah, he bought Long Trek. And since he bought Long Trek, he's bought four more spreads.
What's he trying to do, own the whole valley?
Apparently, that's exactly what he has in mind.
When Deacus Templeton stepped off the train in Palmilla, New Mexico Territory, he headed for the nearest saloon. It had been his experience that a person could find out much more by visiting a saloon than he could by reading a month's worth of local newspapers.
Give me a beer.
There you are.
Templeton pulled out a dollar bill.
Oh, hell. Beer only costs a nickel. Ain't you got no change?
If I get the right information, I don't need any change.
What kind of information?
I'm looking for a man named Jeremiah Priest.
What do you want with him?
What I want with him is my business. If you can tell me where he is, I'll give you $2 more.
The reason I asked is because if you're planning on going up against him, you're going to get yourself killed, and I won't get my money. You give me the $2 now, and I'll tell you where to find him.
All right. Here's the $2.
The bartender took the two bills, examined them for a moment, then slipped them into his pocket.
You see that fella back in the corner? The one with the two women?
Yeah, what about him? Does he know where to find Priest?
Mister, you're looking at Priest.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that little runt of a man is Jeremiah Priest? There must be some mistake. The priest I'm looking for is...
If you're looking for the man who killed Coleman Wesley, that there is him. And if you think there ain't nothing to that little fella, well, that's what Wesley thought. Don't let the way he looks fool you.
Thanks. What are Priest and the two women drinking?
Mr. Priest don't drink nothing but beer. The women drink their special whiskey.
Templeton knew that the bartender meant the women were drinking tea. Hell, they had to. They drank with men all day long. If they were actually drinking whiskey, they would be passed out by midday.
Let me have a beer and two of their drinks.
If you're wanting Mr. Priest's autograph, he don't give it.
I'm not after his autograph.
The bartender poured the drinks, and Templeton took them to the corner of the room where Priest sat. He put the women's drinks down on a separate table. Then he laid a $5 bill alongside each glass.
If you ladies would have drinks here and give me a moment with Mr. Priest, I would appreciate it. I'll only be a moment, and you can come right back.
The two women smiled broadly and quickly moved over to the table.
What do you mean, running my ladies off?
I didn't run them off. They'll be right back. I just need a moment of your time.
Templeton put $100 on the table in front of Priest.
You're not planning on buying me with $100, are you?
Not at all. For that money, all I want is a few moments of your time.
All right, you got a couple of minutes. For what?
I want to make you a business proposition.
What kind of business proposition?
Your kind of business.
Hamburg, Germany. While in Geneva, Inspector Laurent had learned that Mouchette had exchanged nearly all the stolen francs for U.S. dollars, and that made him certain the man was going to America. But some of the stolen money had been exchanged for German marks. Putting two and two together, Laurent had come to the conclusion Mouchette had probably left from Hamburg. He went to the Port Authority office on the Elbe River and introduced himself to the director, then told him what he was looking for.
No passenger named Mouchette has departed from this port, Herr Inspector.
What about a man named Antoine Dubois?
Nobody named Antoine Dubois.
Have any Frenchmen departed from this port in the last 6 months?
Well, I must examine all the records. I'm afraid that will take a few days.
Please do so, Monsieur Director. It is very important that we find this man. He may have also passed himself off as Belgian or Swiss.
I will do what I can, Herr Inspector.
Merci.
2 days later, Laurent was called back to the director's office. He received a stack of papers listing the names of every French, Swiss, and Belgian passenger. He thanked the port director profusely for the information. Laurent then took the papers back to France so he could investigate all 500 names.
I'll do it for $10,000, but I want $5,000 up front.
Why should I do that? What if I pay you $5,000 and Jensen kills you? I'll be out $5,000, and Jensen will still be a problem.
That's a chance we're both taking. All you stand to lose is money. I'd be losing my life. But you won't lose any money, and I won't lose my life. I will kill Jensen.
Are you really that good?
I'm really that good.
I would like to see some sort of demonstration.
What do you want me to do, shoot at a target?
No. Target shooting is for children. I would like to see a demonstration as to how you act in a kill or be killed situation.
How are you going to see that?
I will arrange it, if you are willing to participate.
How are you going to arrange it?
Oh, it's quite simple, really. Over the last few months, I have collected some of the most skilled gunmen in the West. I will offer $1,000 to any of them who can kill you in a fair fight.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you're going to pay someone to kill me?
Yes. That is, I'm going to pay someone to try to kill you. Does that prospect frighten you?
No.
Very good. Monsieur Templeton, would you visit with some of our soldiers? Make the offer and see if anyone is willing to accept the challenge.
All right.
Are you serious, Gurno? You want me to kill one of your own men just so you can test me?
I'm quite serious. Unless, of course, you find it distasteful.
Distasteful? No, I don't find it distasteful. Weird, maybe, but not distasteful. But I do have a condition.
And what would that condition be?
If I kill the man who decides to take the challenge, I want the $1,000 you're promising him.
You will get $10,000 if you kill Jensen.
No, you don't understand. I want the $1,000 you're promising the other man in addition to the $10,000. And I want it paid the moment I kill him.
All right. If that is what it will take for you to give me a demonstration, I'll do that.
At that moment, Templeton came back into the room.
Colonel, I've got a man who says he'll do it.
Very good. Who is it?
It's Strode.
Strode. Yes, an excellent choice.
Strode. Vince Strode.
Yes. Do you know Vince Strode?
I know him. He's a friend of mine. Me and him wintered together a year or so back.
You're friends. And he has agreed to try to kill you.
We used to wonder which one of us would kill the other if it ever came down to it. I reckon we're about to find out.
If neither of you are bothered by the fact that you are friends...
There's $1,000 riding on it. For $1,000, I'd shoot my own mother.
A short while later, every person on the ranch was standing around waiting to see the show. Garneau and Templeton were sitting in chairs up on the front porch of the big house. Garneau held a drink in one hand and a fan in the other. He stood up and walked out to the edge of the porch.
Gentlemen, I want it clearly understood the two of you are entering into this contest of your own free will. I also want it clearly understood that I have not used coercion on either of you.
I don't understand what that word means, Colonel. But I was told if I kill Priest, you'll give me $1,000. Is that right?
Oui. If you are willing to risk your life in this affair d'honneur, I will give you $1,000.
All right, then. That's why I'm here.
And you will make the statement here, in front of all these witnesses, that you are entering into this competition, deadly though it may be, of your own free will?
Hell yeah, I'll say that. What about you, Priest? Are you doing this of your own free will? I mean, being as we're friends and all.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go, Colonel. You heard him. This ain't no more than a game between two friends.
Very well. You may proceed.
Priest's draw was so fast that the men watching him were unable to see when the pistol actually appeared in his hand. Con ran over to Strode.
Strode!
Con watched Strode die. He was the closest thing to a friend that Con had. Suddenly, and unexpectedly, he grabbed Strode's gun from its holster and swung it toward Priest.
Damn you, Priest!
Con beat Strode in that he was able to bring the gun up, but that was as far as he got.
Gah!
Priest walked up to the porch steps and stopped.
I believe, Colonel, you had a question as to whether I'd be up to the task you've chosen for me. Have I answered that question for you?
You have indeed.
And it's my impression the $1,000 you're going to give to Strode is now mine.
That is correct.
Very good. Man, I'm going into town to find a saloon. I'll be buying drinks for anyone who comes with me.
Gilchrist and Manning, two more of Garneau's soldiers, reached town, intending to take Priest up on his offer. As they rode past Longmont Saloon, Gilchrist pulled up. Manning rode on for a short distance before he realized his partner had stopped.
What are you doing? They're all at the brown dirt.
I think I'm going to step in here for a minute or two. You want to come in with me?
No! Longmont's too highfalutin' a place for me. Besides, free drinking's over at the brown dirt, not here.
I'll just be in there for a few minutes.
All right. But you better get there before all the money's drunk up.
You go along. Like I said, I'll be there in a few minutes.
When Gilchrist stepped into the saloon, he saw Smoke standing by the bar, his back to the entrance. The gunman smiled. He was about to earn $10,000. He pulled his pistol.
Turn around, Jensen!
Turning slowly, Smoke saw that Gilchrist had his pistol drawn and pointing at him.
You're worth $10,000 to me, Jensen.
You're mistaken. There's no paper out on me.
I ain't talking about the law. I'm talking about a feller wants you dead, and he's willing to pay $10,000 for it.
Do you really think you'll be able to collect that money? Think about it. You've just admitted in front of all these witnesses that you're being paid to do this. If you kill me, you'll be arrested and hanged. Either that or you'll have to go on the run, and you'll never get the money.
I'll take that chance. I don't think I'll hang.
No, you won't hang. Because I'll kill you.
Yeah, maybe you ain't noticed, but I've got my gun in my hand, and your gun is in the holster. So when you get to hell, I got a couple of friends just went there, Strode and Khan. Tell them I said hello.
You can tell them yourself.
How the hell did you...
Sheriff Carson was at Longmont's in a matter of minutes and was filled in on the incident.
And that's what you heard him say? That he was going to make $10,000 by killing Smoke?
We all heard it, Sheriff.
I wonder what he meant by that. Smoke, do you think there's some old paper out on you?
No. He said that a man was offering up the money.
I wonder who that man is.
I'll tell you who I think it is.
The speaker was a man named Hoyt Miller. He'd been a cowboy on Long Trek Ranch before Garneau had taken possession of it.
I was just over at the Brown Dirt. Seems like every hand the Frenchman has working for him is there. It's almost like a party. Jeremiah Priest is buying everyone drinks.
Jeremiah Priest? He's here?
He's one of Garneau's new hands.
What do you mean? He's one of the Frenchman's new hands? Are you saying he's a cowboy?
No, I ain't saying that. Half the men Garneau has hired in the last month ain't never punched a cow in their lives. They don't do nothing but practice target shooting. That is, the ones that's still alive. Jensen killed Gilchrist, and just before I come into town, Priest killed Strode and Khan.
What? I haven't heard anything about that.
It just happened. And truth is, there probably wouldn't be nothing you could do about it anyhow. It was a fair fight. All of us that was there seen it. Strode braced Priest, and Priest killed him.
What were they fighting about?
They weren't fighting at all.
Wait a minute, didn't you just say Priest and Strode faced each other and Priest killed Strode?
Yeah.
But they weren't fighting over anything?
Word I got is Garneau wanted to see how good Priest was. So he offered $1,000 to anyone who thought they could beat him in a gunfight. Strode tried and lost.
You also mentioned a man named Khan.
Yeah, well, turns out Khan and Strode were friends. When Strode got himself killed, Khan grabbed the gun and tried to kill Priest. Priest had already put his gun away, but he drew it and killed Khan.
Miller, you said you could tell us what it meant when Gilchrist said that killing Smoke was worth $10,000 to him. But I got you off track. You want to tell us what you meant?
The way I heard it, Garneau's going to give Priest $10,000 if he kills Jensen.
You actually heard Garneau say that, did you? Because if you did hear him say that, I'll go out Long Trek and arrest him right now.
Arrest him for what? He ain't actually done nothing yet.
Well, I'd arrest him for solicitation of someone to commit murder. But to make the charge stick, you'd have to testify that you heard him do that.
I can't do that.
If he actually did solicit for murder, he'll go to prison and he can't hurt you. See, he's just as guilty if the murder isn't committed as he is if the murder is committed. So you don't have to be afraid to testify.
Now, that ain't it. I can't say nothing about it because I didn't actually hear him say it. I just heard some of the other boys talking about it. Besides which, I ain't staying around no more. Nance had the right idea when he left. I should have left then, too. I don't like some of the things Garneau is doing.
In Paris, Inspector Laurent had papers spread out on the desk before him, matching records with the 500 names he'd been given by the Port Authority in Hamburg. He'd matched up 87 Swiss names with Swiss records. For every name on the passenger list, he found a corresponding name in the Swiss records, and he saw nothing extraordinary. He had done the same thing with the 112 Belgian names. That left him 301 French names to go through. The first name was Gaston Abadie. He listed himself as a mechanic and was traveling with his wife and two children. Laurent was sure Abadie wasn't Pierre Mouchette. He went on to the next name. It was near midnight when Chris Logan dismounted and walked over to look down at the dam on Frying Pan Creek. He was carrying three sticks of dynamite, tied and fused together, and he had laid the dynamite on top of the wooden dam, rolled out a long piece of fuse, trimmed it, then lit it and backed away quickly. Once more, water began flowing through the natural channel of Frying Pan Creek. Satisfied with his work, Logan mounted his horse to ride home. It had been his intention to pick up any bit of evidence that would suggest anything other than the natural failure of the dam. But as he rode off, a small, overlooked coil of fuse lay on the ground behind him.
I'll be damned. Look there.
Gately pointed to the spot where the dam had been.
The dam is gone.
Anderson, who was riding with Gately, dismounted and walked over to have a closer look. He saw several pieces of splintered wood lying about.
It's not just gone. Someone took it down. Like as not, it was dynamited.
Let's toss these pieces into the stream.
Why?
If Garneau finds out the dam was dynamited, it could get dangerous for someone. If he thinks the dam just failed due to water pressure, it would be much better.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Anderson joined Gately in tossing the shattered remnants of the dam into the water.
What are you men doing?
Gately looked around to see that Manning had ridden up on him.
Nothing, just cleaning up a bit is all.
What happened to the dam?
I think the water pressure must have caused it to give way.
Manning dismounted and picked up one of the pieces for a closer examination. Shrugging, he started to toss it into the water. Then he saw the small coil of fuse. Reaching down, he picked it up for a closer examination.
Water didn't do this. This dam was dynamited.
Oh, I don't think so.
Manning held up the coil of fuse.
Really? Then what do you call this?
Paris, France. Inspector Laurent was in General Moreau's office.
General, I believe I have found the man I have been looking for.
You found Mouchette?
Well, I haven't actually found him yet. But at least I am certain I have discovered the name he is now using.
Laurent placed some papers on General Moreau's desk.
He is the Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau.
Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau? Inspector, I am aware of no such colonel.
Precisely so, mon général. But someone using that name booked passage from Hamburg, Germany, to New York in America. And since there is no such person, I am certain it must be Mouchette.
Yes, I am sure this must be so. But if the coquin has escaped to America, I fear he has eluded us. America is a very large country.
I would like to go to America to look for him.
General Moreau stroked his chin as he considered the request.
General, this man not only stole 2.5 million francs, he also murdered Sergeant Dubois. And now, using a false name and rank, he is no doubt bringing discredit upon the French Republic. He must not get away with it.
What makes you think you can find him in America?
Because, mon général, I have right on my side.
Very well, Inspector. Go to America with my blessings, and with the hope of all France that you find this criminal.
I will find him, mon général.
The cowhand was in the back of the barn at the door.
Pearly?
Pearly walked up to him.
Gately, what are you doing here?
I'm afraid there's going to be some trouble over at Logan's place.
What kind of trouble?
Bad trouble. Garneau put up a dam on Frying Pan Creek to keep the water from flowing onto Logan's ranch. I think Logan must have blown the dam last night. One of Garneau's gunnies found out about it. I think Garneau plans to send some people over to teach Logan a lesson.
Why are you telling me this, Gately? I thought you worked for Garneau.
I did, but I don't work for him no more. Me and Andy has quit. I don't like the way the Frenchman does business.
Thanks for telling me. I'll tell Smoke and see what he wants to do about it.
I'm going with you.
Smoke, Pearly, and Cal had stopped by Caro de Boncata on their way to Logan's ranch.
You don't need to go. We just stopped by to tell you what's happening.
If I'm the one who has talked all the others into staying, should I not subject myself to the same dangers I'm asking of them?
There's likely to be some shooting. You said yourself you have no experience with guns.
My father told me the story of Uncle Humboldt. He was a boy raised in Brooklyn, just as my father was. He had never even fired a gun until he went into the army during the war. At Gettysburg, my Uncle Humboldt was mentioned in the dispatches for what he did with a rifle.
Yeah, I saw some examples of your uncle's marksmanship. He was very good with it. Very well. You can come along if you wish.
Thank you. I'll just get my guns.
Make sure you bring your rifle.
Concerned they might get to Logan's place too late, they were glad to see Logan, his wife, and his two sons working in the garden when they rode up. Logan looked up as the riders approached, at first with some apprehension, and then with a smile when he recognized them.
Well, Smoke, Malcolm, Hurley, Cal, welcome. What y'all doing here?
Chris, did you dynamite the dam on Frying Pan Creek last night?
What if I did? I don't see where the Frenchman has the right to dam off a creek.
Whoa, now, we're on your side, Chris. But the thing is, Garneau might be sending some men over here.
Well, let him do it. Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull didn't scare me. That Peckerwood ain't gonna. I'll stand up to him.
Yeah, you won't have to stand up to him alone. We're gonna be here with you. But it might be a good idea for Mrs. Logan and your two boys to leave. They can go to my place and stay with Sally for a while.
Yeah, now that you mention it, that might be a pretty good idea. Ethel, I'm going to get the buckboard hitched up. Take the boys over to Jensen's place.
Ethel was wide-eyed, obviously afraid.
Mrs. Logan, go around by Cottonwood Pass Road. That way there's little chance you'll run across any of Garneau's men.
Ethel stood there with her sons until Logan brought the buckboard around a few minutes later. He helped her and the two boys into the buckboard.
Stay with Sally until we come back.
Ethel nodded and slapped the reins against the back of the team, and the buckboard left.
Cal, why don't you ride out toward the south and keep an eye out? Let us know if you see anything.
Will do.
Logan watched his wife drive off for a long minute. Then he turned back to Smoke and the others. He dismounted.
My lad.
What?
When I said the Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull didn't scare me, my lad, they scare the hell out of me.
Good.
Good?
Yeah, good. I don't want to be standing here facing Garneau's men with a fool beside me. Well, we may as well get ready for them. Chris, this is your place and you're an old army sergeant. Do you have any ideas on disposition of the troops?
Yeah. One of you should be in the hayloft over there. You have a good field of fire from the open door.
I'll go there.
Another could be up on top of the machine shop. Get on the other slope of the roof, just behind the peak.
I'll do that.
Smoke, if you'd like, you could be down here on the ground, waiting just behind the cottonwood over there. I'll be by the watering trough. I can get down behind it quickly if I need to.
They're coming!
How far and how many?
I'd say they're still a mile to a mile and a half away. I counted 10 of them.
Well, that means they have us exactly doubled.
Is Garneau with them?
To tell the truth, Smoke, I don't know if he is or if he isn't. I only seen him one time, and they were too far back to make out any actual features.
Well, no matter. We'll handle it all right. You get up into the hayloft with Pearlie. Malcolm, you may as well get yourself in position as well.
Right.
Come on, Cal. Let's get to our places.
The three men left to climb into their perches, so that only Smoke and Logan remained behind.
How do you think we should handle this, Smoke? Let him get close enough to talk, or start shooting as soon as we can see him?
Yell at him and stop him just out of pistol range. If they try to pass that point after you've warned them, start shooting.
Armed and ready, they stood next to each other, waiting for Garneau's men. And they didn't have long to wait. About 10 minutes later, a group of men on horseback came galloping towards the cabin. They were spread out in a long line.
Smoke, I've seen this before. Ain't gonna be no talking. No calling out for them not to come any closer. They're coming at us in a full-blown attack.
All right, get down behind the water trough.
Pearlie! Cal!
Yeah!
Start shooting as soon as they're in range!
Right!
Malcolm!
Yes, sir, I heard.
Smoke levered around into the chamber of his rifle, then got behind the cottonwood tree and waited. The line of horses came within 100 yards of the barn, which was the closest building to it.
Now!
Smoke and the rest of the men quickly returned fire. The defenders had not picked out individual targets, so only 3 attackers went down.
He ain't alone! We've been ambushed!
Let's get out of here!
Templeton jerked his horse around and led the retreat as all seven remaining men galloped away.
Whoa, did you see those boys run?
Cal, Pearlie, and Malcolm came down from their perches, and the five men gathered just in front of the watering trough.
You know what I think? I think them boys got a huge surprise.
Yeah?
How'd you know they were coming?
Believe it or not, one of Garneau's men told us.
Who was it? Gately or Anderson?
Both of them, actually.
Yeah, I thought so. They were about the only two men still working over there who had any good left in them.
Inspector Laurent stood in the office of Captain Warren Hagedorn of the New York Police Department.
I am Inspector André Laurent of the Gendarmerie Nationale, the French police, and I am looking for one of my countrymen, a person who identifies himself as Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau.
Inspector, if there is such a person as the Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau in New York, I know nothing of him.
He brought $500,000 in American money with him. I don't think anyone would keep that much money on his person.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, all right. I'll do a very thorough check of all the banks in the city. If he made a deposit anywhere, we'll find him.
Thank you, monsieur.
You want this man pretty bad, don't you?
Oui. He not only stole the money from the French army, he murdered a soldier who was under his command, then attempted to blame that murdered soldier for the robbery. He is a man who is completely without honor. I want to take him home to face the guillotine.
I don't blame you. I don't know what I can do to help, but I promise you that we'll do everything we can for you.
Charles Woodward was driving a buckboard, taking his daughter to the depot in Big Rock. Lucy was going to visit a cousin in Atlanta. In the back of the buckboard was the train case Lucy would carry on board with her, as well as two suitcases that would be checked through to make the trip in the baggage car.
Now, you're sure you're taking enough clothes? I wouldn't want you to get to Atlanta and suddenly find that you didn't have a dress, a hat, a pair of shoes, or the pitcher and basin from your bedroom.
Father, you know what Atlanta is like. Why, Cousin Doreen will have all sorts of balls and cotillions for me to attend. You wouldn't want me to embarrass you by not being properly dressed, would you?
Oh, heavens no. The last thing I want is to be embarrassed because my daughter, who more often than not can be found wearing men's pants, shirt, hat, and straddling a horse, wouldn't be properly dressed at some fancy ball.
Then you needn't worry, because I won't embarrass you.
They reached the train station, and Woodward parked the buckboard under a tree. Woodward grabbed the suitcases, Lucy carried the train case, and they entered the depot. After securing a ticket and checking the suitcases, they took a seat to wait until it was time to board. Woodward turned to his daughter.
I see you're wearing your mother's cameo brooch.
Yes, isn't it beautiful? She said I could wear it while I was in Atlanta.
Now you be careful that you don't lose it. Your mother sets quite a store by that.
I'll make sure I don't lose it. I'll wear it pinned to my dress every day.
I have to say, I'm surprised you're going. I thought you and young Malcolm Puddle were sparking one another.
Why, Father, whatever gave you that idea?
Nothing, my dear. Absolutely nothing. I was just teasing you a little. I want you to have a wonderful time. Give your cousin my regards.
I will, Father.
And I want you to send me a telegram as soon as you arrive in Atlanta. I want to know you got there safely.
I swear you're a bigger worrywart than Mama. Don't worry about me. I'll be just fine. I'm not a little girl anymore, you know.
It's just that Atlanta is very large, not like the small towns we have here. You must watch yourself while you're there.
Father, I will be all right.
Karin Briggs had been in position for nearly an hour, waiting by the tower where the train would have to stop for water. Behind them, tied to a willow tree, were two horses. One of the horses was pulling a travois.
Which car is she on, Briggs?
Well, according to what we was told, she was going to be in the first car.
Here it comes.
As the train came to a stop, the two men stepped up onto the vestibule platform between the mail car and the first car. They pushed open the door and stepped inside. The car was dimly lit by two low-burning, gimbal-mounted lanterns, one on the front wall and the other on the rear. The aisle stretched out between two rows of seats. Nearly all the passengers were asleep.
Is that her?
Briggs indicated a woman who was sleeping in the front seat.
Yeah, I think so.
Briggs reached out and touched the young woman.
I'm sorry to wake you. Are you Lucy Woodward?
Yes. Why do you ask?
Your mama has had a terrible accident. Your papa sent us to get you and bring you back home.
Oh my God, what's happened?
Let's talk outside so we don't wake the other passengers. Come with us. We have a buckboard and a fast team.
Concerned about her mother, Lucy got up to follow the two men outside. She didn't notice Briggs place a folded sheet of paper onto her seat.
Let me help you down, ma'am.
Thank you.
They approached the two saddled horses.
What is this? I don't see a buckboard.
Well, now, ain't that funny?
Carr, behind Lucy, raised his pistol over his head.